Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening on the ESPN. Well, you know, wherever you listen to your podcast, rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It is that time of week where we do an interview here. Joining us now from Slate. Used to work here. I can't say that no more. Joel Anderson, H-Town. Does that shirt say the state of Houston?
It does say the state of Houston. Yeah, man, I represent. You know what I'm saying? You know what it is.
You know, you Houston guys are tricky with me because y'all like I'm only kind of from Houston.
I mean, nah, you count. You count. I think so. If you want to claim Houston.
Oh, I claim. See, the thing about Houston, though, and I have to explain this to people. Houston's so damn big.
Oh, yeah.
That you're Houston, because you're from over there by the Ship Channel.
Well, that's where my pops is. I'm from the South Side, okay. Low City.
Okay. Yeah. But that's still another world.
Oh, yeah. There's no reason to go on the North Side, like no. Where you were from. Like,
yeah, and see, coming up. And there's reasons to go to the South Side.
Yeah.
Therefore, you South Siders believe that the North Side is an entirely different municipality.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like y'all version of Houston wasn't really ours. Y'all weren't near Astroworld, you know what I'm saying? Y'all weren't near Drumsticks. People from Houston know what we're talking about.
Yes, and also it's particular with black people, though, right? Because black Houston is South Houston.
Yes.
Right,
yes.
Like that's what it is.
South Park, Sunnyside, Third Ward, you know.
Although, the black neighborhoods that are on the North Side, a little treacherous.
Man, look, I had to learn. I was like, oh, I didn't know y'all had it like this.
Oh, you stumbled into the wrong,
yeah, man,
the wrong
one?
Like,
I was like, where are we going again? What is this?
You know, but that was like Fifth Ward. No, that's North.
Yeah, man.
That's North. Angus Holmes.
Yeah, I was like, oh, okay. There's all the neighborhoods you heard about that you know, I didn't realize that was what North Side was. And I was like, oh, okay. Studiewood, I guess, kind of. Count two, sort of.
Yeah, a little bit.
A little bit,
but I'm way north.
Yeah, oh, that's not, I mean.
I am at the fringe of what you can call Houston. I'm like, look, that's what the address is, man.
Yeah, right.
And then I didn't go to school in Houston. Yeah. So then nobody, I'm just like, look, I don't know how to explain this to y'all.
Well, you don't know, I mean, you know about those schools because you know about Houston schools in Houston, South Houston, whatever, because you're from Houston. But, like, nobody knows about, like, Sauk Creek.
No.
You know what I mean?
And that's where I was supposed to go, right? Like, y'all got no concept of that. They be putting cats in the league. At least they used to. I don't know what they're doing
They
now.
Were good. Actually, I think they won a state championship a couple years ago.
Really?
Which is crazy. No, wait. I'm sorry. Safair.
That's the craziest thought in the world to me, that Safair could win a state championship.
Because Safair is like.
They were always bad.
I mean, yeah. They didn't even get the brothers in that.
No.
They were in that area.
Well, it was. There were brothers within that district.
Right.
But at the time I was there. It seemed like it was like, no, that's not where we want y'all to go.
Yes.
How you feel about Jersey Village? Would you like to go to Jersey Village?
Or when South Falls came on.
Yes, well, that was the whole flip up.
Yeah.
When that happened, they were like, yo, we got a plan.
Right. I was like, Gabe Maneki, huh? Okay. I see.
Yeah, what's so wild about him is I think that's pronounced Monique, and they were just mispronouncing his name for years.
Are you serious?
Yeah, because his dad worked at Prairie View.
Come on.
Yeah, his dad worked at Prairie View, and they always said Monique. And then I get on TV, and I just like, man, they just don't be caring what you say your name is, man. They just going to call you.
Oh, yeah, whatever
you're supposed to be called.
Yeah.
Now, we're going to talk a few things with Joel. Joel's working on a podcast now on the Tupac and Biggie killings, right?
Yeah.
And so we're going to talk a little bit about that. I want to start, though, with you, with what may be your favorite topic in the world.
Oh, what's that?
If anybody follows Joel on Twitter,
oh, okay, I know
you recognize that Joel Anderson's claim to fame is that it was this, 1988?
1988. That's
Joel Anderson was deemed the fastest 10-year-old in America.
I was rolling, boy.
I need to know, like, did you win a race to be the fastest 10-year-old in America?
Okay, so what I'll explain, what I'll explain is that I won my region, okay, which was all of Texas, basically. And so I went to the Nationals.
And this is in the 100?
This is in the 100. Yeah, and so then I went to the Nationals, false started in the prelims, and then didn't get to actually win gold.
Oh.
But what happened is that I had run the fastest time in the nation that year. And so they sent me, they literally sent me a certificate saying, you know, you had the fastest 100. And my coworkers at the time at BuzzFeed didn't believe me, and I had that mug. You know what I'm saying? So I brought it. I was like, hey, look, man, I ain't got to lie. Why y'all lie y'all about that? You know what I'm saying?
Let me find out, though. You was faking the fuck a little bit. You ain't even win the championship.
I mean, I didn't win the championship. I know I could have beat that dude. You know what I'm saying? He was talking. Jason Johnson from Shreveport, Louisiana. He was cold, but I could have got
him. I'm just here to tell you now, that dude from Shreveport, Louisiana had to go through things that you can't relate to. And he needs to You need to have that.
Once I moved to Shreveport,
I lived in Shreveport
for like a couple of years, yeah. And I was like, okay, man, well, it probably meant more to him. You
know? I have to tell you, I have two Shreveport stories. One, I don't really, actually, I'll tell you, Gabe, we're going to do that thing where we play the music over this, right?
Thank you for your patience. A representative from the right time will be with you shortly. Your current hold time is
15 seconds.
That's not quite like every city in Georgia that's not Atlanta swears is the second largest city in Georgia. Every single one of them. Savannah, Augusta, Columbus, right. Macon, they all the second largest city in Georgia.
Oh, yeah, and it's probably something like Lawrenceville or something like that.
You know, that's real talk. I hadn't quite thought about that, right? It'd be like California, where like the top five cities in California are all, it's like L.A., San Francisco, Oakland, and like Anaheim.
Yeah,
like
Anaheim San might be too. San Jose and something like that.
Well, actually, San Jose is quietly huge.
I think it's one of the 10 largest cities.
Seven figures.
Yeah.
Seven figure population.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, no, it's one of those. But you also, you play college football. You played at TCU.
Yeah. I don't talk about that as much because that didn't go as well as 1988.
That is actually, I had not thought about that until you said it. You talk a lot more about, that you actually were a Division I athlete and you don't bring that part up. You talk more about your 10-year-old exploit.
I didn't really rack up no stats. There's nothing really to talk about. You know what I mean? I was there for a couple years, but I don't, you know. I'm proud of the fact that I was on a college team that, like, you know, I got to experience that and it did teach me some things, namely that I didn't love football that much.
Oh, really?
but it didn't go quite as well.
Yeah, I remember I did ask you, I was like, was Gary Patterson there when you were there? You were like, yeah, he's the defensive coordinator. He said he's the first person to tell me that I'll be going pro in something other than sports.
He told me, I'll never forget, cause, it was when the coaches that had brought me in, Pat Sullivan, they had gotten fired. So Dennis Franchione was the head coach, and they're bringing in this new offense. Gary Patterson was defensive coordinator, and he ran the spring drills. And so I'm out there just struggling, dog. You know, I'll never forget LaDainian Tomlinson looking at me at a distance because of how bad I was doing. And he was just, like, looking at me just shaking his head. And Gary Patterson told me, he was like, man, you got feet like an offensive lineman.
Ooh.
And I was like.
And you're a running back.
Yeah, I was running back. I mean, you know, I didn't have a lot of wiggle. I would run at you. You know what I'm saying? But I might not be able to get away from you. And I was just like, oh, okay, like, I'm not, you know, like, I never thought that I was like, I felt like an athlete that can compete on a Division I level, but I was like, oh, I'm not going to go pro. Like, and I don't like this a lot. So, like, why would I keep doing it?
Yeah.
You know?
So, and it hurts.
It's really painful, man. Like, I mean, I'm messed up just a little, and I didn't even play.
Yeah, I was always wondering that. I was like, do you still, like, how much do you feel it now?
Oh, man, I have a bad neck and back. I have, you know, back problems and stuff. My legs and everything are fine, but, like, neck, back problems, all that's coming back from college football. That's getting banged up in practice. I mean, all the hitting happens in practice, you know what I'm saying? Well, if you're on the scout team like I was.
I know it's funny, though, because you say that you didn't love it like that, but when you were covering the college football for here, I did enjoy you being at the Rose Bowl and being like, you know, I had to run down this field, right?
Oh, man, like, I mean, I do that at actually every college stadium I come across. I just, like, I got to run across it, man, just see what it's like. But the Rose Bowl is just something surreal. You look at that on TV, like, that is the college game growing up. Like, it just seems like it's splashed in sunlight and it's beautiful. And then I was there and I got to look at it and I was like, man, I don't have to. It's early, man. Nobody's, you know, see me, dog. I had to go out there and get my 30 yards in.
I'm surprised you make nobody take no video on it.
I should have. I should have, because I was still moving a little bit.
All right, we'll be back in a minute with more with Joel Anderson. But first, guys, summertime is here. If you've been breaking out that baseball cap for a day at the beach or the ballpark to hide thinning hair, you may not have to anymore. Don't sweat hair loss this summer. Do something now while you still can. 66% of men lose their hair by age 35, like me. And yes, that is a big problem. Why do guys sit there and do nothing about it when they could turn to medicine and science? Well, there's a solution, and it's for Hims.com. It's a one-stop shop for hair loss, skincare, and other wellness supplements for men. Hims is helping guys be the best version of themselves with licensed physicians and FDA-approved products to help treat hair loss. Prescription solutions backed by science. Hims was created by a guy who knows some men's health conversations are easier online than in person. No more awkward in-person doctor's visits or long pharmacy lines. For Hims connects you to real doctors online, which can save you hours. Completely confidential and discreet. Answer a few quick questions, a doctor will review, and if they determine it's right for you, can prescribe you medication to treat hair loss that is shipped directly to your door. Get the hair loss treatment everyone is talking about. Featured in GQ, Men's Health, Esquire, and Playboy, to name a few. Order now. My listeners get a trial month of Hims for just $5 today, right now, while supplies last. See website for full details and safety information. This will cost hundreds if you went to the doctor or pharmacy. Go to forhims.com/Bomani. That's forhims.com/Bomani. forhims.com/Bomani. You know, we mentioned briefly that you're going to do the podcast with Slate on the Tupac and Biggie killings, and I want to use that as a segue into my internet last couple of days.
Oh, man. Now, I know you. I feel bad for you.
Now, you and I, we followed each other for a while now, yeah. So you've watched the evolution of me on Twitter, and I don't really get into it people like that no more, man.
Right.
I'm kind of out of the business of fighting with them.
It don't do you any good.
No. I'm not who I was in 2009, at least to other people.
Right.
Therefore, it's just like, okay, this isn't worth it. I don't feel like fighting everybody, you know, and sometimes you just want to say what you think about something without having to get all this input from everybody else.
Yeah, man.
You know, so I'm like out of that business. But this list came out a couple days ago, and this was hilarious. It was the ultimate okie doke, right? Guy just puts up a random list of the top 50 rappers.
Right.
That had Joe Budden at number 3, didn't have Scarface, didn't have Chuck D.
Right.
And didn't have KRS-One.
Yeah.
All right. And look, I just think this is an interesting observation. We are about the same age.
Yeah.
KRS-One, when we were younger, was absolutely on the list of maybe greatest rapper of all time.
I mean, he was that dude. He was in I'm Gonna Get You Sucker, man.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Like, he was a legit celebrity, like, you know, pioneer of the art form.
Right. You could not do one of those lists without KRS-One in your top 3. Forget about your top 50. Yeah. You couldn't have him in your top 3. Now he's like completely forgotten. And so I just made the point. I'm just like, yo, man, this dude will eat your favorite MC alive. Because I don't think any of us would argue that there's a better, like, park rapper than KRS-One. Right? Like a battle rapper. Like whatever, like what at the most essential form. KRS-One is that dude. Dude, I had everybody popping up. Then why'd he lose a battle to Nelly? I'm like, dog, you didn't lose no battle to Nelly.
That's somebody that was like 4 years old when that was going on.
Yo, you but apparently I mean? This idea has propagated itself out here in these streets. And people out here really thinking that Nelly like was in KRS-One's face in a park doing rap hands. And KRS-One was like, all right, dog, you got me.
Right. I mean, the thing is that what they think is what is really common about like a lot of new to the game rap fans is that they think the record sales determines who the victor is.
Yes.
Right. And like, so by that standard, yeah. I mean, I guess if you want to argue that Nelly sold more records, fine. But like, you can't argue that he had more of an impact on the game, and you damn sure can't argue that he can out rap.
No,
KRS-One.
He actually tried to come at KRS-One, and right. KRS-One came back and crushed him. But the problem was, it was against Nelly.
Right.
So like, nobody really cares.
Right.
You know, but somehow that means that Nelly won.
Right. I mean, man. The thing is that even in that time, like, people did not take Nelly seriously. Like,
no.
Nelly was a top-selling artist, but nobody took him seriously as a rapper.
Right.
Like, you can hear it. It was a theme throughout his music. He's like, yo, like, you all may not think this is real hip-hop, this type of singing or whatever, but this is what I do. And, like, that's fine. People can rock with that. But, like, to say that he, like, out-rapped KRS-One or one, like, I mean, that is just asinine. But that's children. I mean, that's children, man.
Yeah,
that's children.
But I hope that's children, like, right? Like, I don't... But
nobody over 35 thinks that.
I would hope, right? You know what Nelly is, though? He's the first dude ever to drop that we was like, nah, bro, we just gonna let you live. You know what I mean? Because like, MC Hammer had to be like, oh, okay, so y'all just let Nelly live, but y'all tried to get me up out the paint?
Yeah. Man, MC Hammer went through it, bro.
Yes.
And, like, what was funny, did you see that Chuck D, like, talked about MC Hammer? He loves him. And I'm just like, yo, like, MC Hammer, not only was MC Hammer had to go through, like, some real, like, I know, I'm, you know, like, I'm an entertainer, you know, like, this is a different version of hip hop or whatever. But like, MC Hammer was a gangster, man. MC
Hammer. That's what people don't know.
MC Hammer was like, man, the clip of, Big Boy and Andre 3000 was like, run up on Hammer.
Run up on Hammer. Yeah. Like, that was the thing. Hammer came back with the Funky Headhunter.
Yeah.
Which none of us were trying to hear.
I mean,
and little did we know that the fake Hammer was actually the dude in the Hammer pants.
Right.
That was the insincere Hammer.
Right.
The real Hammer, like, you know the MC Search story, right?
Wait.
So, you know, Third Base did the Word to Your Mother, you know, all that with Hammer.
Yeah.
Hammer took that as an insult to his mother.
Oh.
Like, God. Hammer was like, y'all talking about my mama.
Oh, wow.
So, Hammer wanted to kill them. And when I say kill, I mean kill.
He had, like, legit Oakland shooters.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So, at the American Music Awards, the word got out, yo, Hammer's goons are coming for you.
Right.
Like, coming for Third Base.
Right.
And the Third Base cats don't know what to do. So what they did to save them, they got them seats by Michael Jackson. That was the move. I think Russell did it. Russell Simmons, they did. He's like, look, the way that we can keep you safe is if we keep you by Michael Jackson.
That's crazy.
Then can't nothing happen to you.
That is
but
crazy.
That's Hammer.
Yeah, man. Like, Hammer rode with Death Row, and it was, like, not out of the realm of, like, his worldview. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
He was, like, you know, Suge respected that dude.
Yeah.
And for Suge to respect you, I mean, it says something about what Hammer's gangster was.
Yeah, like Chuck's point about Hammer always is, he's just like, I don't know how we deemed Hammer to be a sellout when Hammer's doing all these things that black people do, right? Like, that was his argument. I mean, it was in his book. Like, I didn't see him talking about Twitter, but he was always on the Hammer program. And look, I wasn't on the Hammer program, just to be clear.
Oh, man. I you know what? I actually loved Hammer, man.
Really?
As a kid, I went and saw Hammer perform at the Summit in 1991, and I think Vanilla Ice was on was on it too. And I mean, those dudes perform. Like, you might not argue that they were great rappers, but they were performers.
Right.
And like, I mean, I think that there's a role for that in hip hop. I mean, hip hop, you know, is dancing is a part of the art form.
But yeah, you know, I mean, it was at that time that it was kind of, I think Hammer doing it, and Hammer, once he got to the heist that he did, that's when cats was like, all right, no more dancing. Y'all
right,
cheating.
Right, right.
Y'all out here cheating. We out here rapping for real. Y'all out here dancing.
Right.
No more dancing. And the dancing stopped. And then Big Daddy Kane was like, dog, what about me?
I know. Y'all forced me into all of this. They had LL Cool J dancing.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
You know, the wildest thing is Jay-Z and Big Daddy Kane are like the same age.
Oh, my God. That is crazy.
Right. Because out of nowhere, Big Daddy Kane was gone.
Man. I mean, after really like 95, 96, there's nothing.
Before even that, I would argue.
Man. Yeah. I mean, I was bumping Big Daddy Kane in middle school. And yeah, after that.
That was a wrap.
He was done by the time high school came along.
Yes.
And all the Chronic and everything came along.
Yep.
He was done.
Yeah. We flushed Hammer out. Big Daddy Kane all of a sudden gets thrown out the game also.
Big Daddy Kane was an old school rapper by the time Biggie had come out.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, it was like, oh, okay, like, they've passed the BK crown to this new dude. I mean, it was like, that was 2 years ago.
Yep.
You know?
But you know, I think that is in part what happened, though, to KRS-One was Biggie, right? Mm. Because what KRS-One was a gangster, but then he was the conscious dude, so it's like the conscious gangster.
Right.
He's like, yo, just because I'm a gangster don't mean that, you know, I don't know what's going on in the world.
Right.
Biggie was like, just because I'm a gangster don't mean I don't be at the club, right? You know, just because I'm a gangster don't mean I can't be fly.
I like ladies too,
right?
You know,
and then the gangster went completely in that direction,
right?
Like, the conscious gangster. You have cats like Kendrick Lamar who will talk about gangsters and also be like on a conscious kick, and Nas is like in that, you know, in that same type of realm. But the conscious gangster, like Killer Mike, is kind of like the last of the conscious gangsters.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I guess because, like, there's no money in it, right? And, like, that's what so much, like, it's hard to sustain a career if you don't, like, make party hits, if you don't bang. You know what I mean? Like, other people besides, you know, backpack heads have to like your music for you to have a career.
Yep, no, rap. We the gangster is not nearly as interesting as the gangster used to be back in the day.
Oh, man. I mean, X-Clan, all these kind of cats. You know what I'm saying? Dudes that would just roll up on you.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yo, you know what we need more of? We need more crack power religion in rap. Rap was so much better when we had crack power religions in it, don't you think?
Oh, man. I mean, all that 5% of stuff.
Right.
For, like, I mean,
did they all just stop rapping?
I mean,
like, whatever happened to the 5%ers?
Is it okay? The only rapper you ever hear talk about Louis Farrakhan is Jay Electronica now.
Yes, that's right.
I mean, I think maybe people have kind of got on to, like, okay, maybe we shouldn't talk
about
that.
Yeah, no, it's over on that.
Yeah, right.
It's a wrap on that. Like, it was funny because, you know, when Public Enemy got in the thing where Griff said that the Jews are responsible for 70% of the wickedness in the world, yeah. I'm like, yo, how did you calculate that, right?
Seriously. Right.
And then they had to get Griff out of there and everything. And I'm like, yo, y'all was shouting out Farrakhan 2 years ago.
I mean, look this, so maybe you don't, you're from Texas.
Yes.
I didn't understand the Jewish thing in that way because, like, there's not a lot of, there were not.
I'd be trying to explain.
I was like, I didn't understand, like, the Farrakhan. I was like, I don't know what you're talking about, man. Like, we don't even live in the same neighborhood with you cats. You know,
right.
Like, what is,
yeah, what, I, right. Like, yeah. I knew literally one or two right. Jewish people
yeah.
growing up. Like, I had no idea. Like, I came to find out later that there's a kind of Jewish part of town in Houston. The things over in Bel Air.
Yeah, Mile Land.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Oh, okay. Get it. Got,
right.
Makes sense.
We didn't think of that until later. I was like, oh, that's just Mile. That's where the movie theater is.
Right. I had no idea. Right. So, like, with cats, like, with the Farrakhan kind of stuff like that, I'm like, yo, what's going on here? And I guess right. I also didn't come up in church, so I don't have any of this, you know, like, I ain't got no beef over what happened. I don't know what that is.
Right.
But I had no idea.
Oh, it was just totally foreign to me. You know what I'm saying? It's like, oh, like, y'all, what is the beef about? I don't understand. You know what I'm saying? And then, like, with Farrakhan, like, you, at that time, you know, Farrakhan had his little renaissance in the early to mid 90s, and it was just like, oh, okay, he's talking about black empowerment.
Yeah.
And such, and it's like, okay, well, this Jewish, that's crazy. I don't know what he's talking about.
Right.
But like, now as you get older, you see, oh, that's a little bit more insidious.
Like, yo, that's wrong. This is a serious problem.
This is really
here.
Bad. Yeah. I was like, okay. All right, so maybe as people got onto that, like rappers were like, well, maybe we should start talking about the Nation of Islam in public.
But like, it's interesting because, like, in real life, like, I am aware that anti-Semites exist.
Yes.
But I don't think I've ever met one, right? Like, I've been in a conversation and been like, oh my God, you have to stop talking about this. Like, I've right. never met that person, but apparently he's everywhere.
Oh, oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, I feel like that's definitely like a New York, D.C. thing. You know what I'm saying? Like, remember when those cats went with Covington Catholic?
That's right.
Went up there and that, like, how it started. And I was like, oh.
I was right. It's the Black Israelites.
Yeah, the Black Israelites out there yelling at. I was like, oh, okay. I guess, like, you know, that's where it comes from, you know?
Let me tell you, it's interesting about New York and the Black Israelites. I made some joke on Twitter once about the Black Israelites. And I was like, I don't know if y'all know what I'm talking about. No. White folks in New York absolutely know about the Black Israelites because they camp out over there by Times Square. So, like, they've all come across them. And I'm like, oh, wow.
They be yelling at y'all.
Yes. I was like, oh, something we can all share in, talking about the Black Israelites. Like, I knew they set up at, like, 125th and Lenox.
Yo,
but I didn't know that they was down there, like, where the white folks were.
Oh, yeah, man. They got to go to where they believe the problem to be.
Yes. You know? But I can't believe they let y'all keep coming.
I know. But, man, I guess, like, they ain't never going to really run up on you. They just going to insult you. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So.
Yeah. I guess right. that's,
you don't have like, to do with that.
First Amendment, fool.
Yeah. Right? Like, right. We got our rights.
Yeah. In black and purple leather.
Yeah.
And like all the stuff that they are wearing.
With the, you know, man. I mean, they look like Avengers, you know, like Black Avengers or something like that.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? It's just like, okay. What are y'all into for real? What is it? What is this? What is the relationship to God here? I don't understand. You explain to me. Yeah.
But I also wonder, like, what exactly the chain of events is in your own life to make you be like, yeah, I want to rock with y'all, right? And how much does it cost to buy all that gear?
Right, and wear that gear in the summer, by the way, too. You have to be hot outside, man. Climate change.
Where do you buy it?
I'm saying, seriously. I mean, not on time fashion. I guess you have to order that on maybe Amazon.
But it's not like you see somebody else wearing it and they'd be like, nah, I ain't no Black Israelite. Like, they the only ones that seem to be wearing this stuff. So is there like a Black Israelite outlet?
Oh, they gotta have like their own like storefront somewhere in Harlem that we ain't ever been over. Man, dude, I was at my barber the other day and like all of a sudden I was like, you can just see how it happens. And my barber's been to prison, you know, like a lot of barbers.
Yes.
And he was just like, yeah, man, you know how they say that there's a one gate to heaven? I was like, I didn't go to church either. Other than I went to Catholic school.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, so actually there's 12. And then he shows me on his phone. He's like, it's like the 12 different tribes.
Oh,
and I was like, oh, they got you too now, huh? I was like, they got you too, damn. Oh, man.
But what's crazy is a whole lot of those cats, they needed something.
Yeah.
And it did make their lives better.
Yeah.
But they are not making our lives better.
Oh, they just, I mean, they've got structure now.
Yes.
They've got purpose.
Yes.
Which is absolutely valuable.
Yes.
But yeah, it's like, I don't know if I'm really going to be into that. And like,
right.
we can't, it's going to be hard for us to hang out if you keep talking about
yes.
this.
Well, I say the thing with Nation of Islam.
Yeah.
We can all point to all these people whose lives mm-hmm. have been greatly and positively yes. impacted by the Nation of Islam.
Yes.
But man. Just don't talk to me about this.
Right. I was like, I'm not your audience. You know what I'm saying? We agree on a lot of things in terms of, like, you know, structures in America or whatever. But, like, anything outside of that, like, we just, you know, you're going to have to go to the mosque about that.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes. Like, I've read, have you read David Remnick's book, King of the World, about Ali?
Oh, no, I have not.
It's worth checking. But okay. One thing that's interesting is hearing Ali, like, talk about the things that he had learned, mm-hmm. and he sounds like every other college student who has picked up some new religion, right, when they've gone away, and then they come back, and he'd be like, dog, what?
Right, right. Like, I mean,
I gotta understand.
I mean, it takes you a while, because actually I thought about, I don't want to say this in public. You know, when I was in high school,
high school, okay. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't know, man. I might want to go do the Nation of Islam thing, too. I went and saw Farrakhan speak at TSU, you know, 1993. I was a child, okay? Yeah. Keep in mind. But I was like, you know, and then it's just like, oh, this has, like, absolutely nothing to do with, like, actual Islam. You know what I mean? Like,
well, they are the Black Scientologists.
Oh.
Like, if you think about it, it's a very similar setup. Yeah. To Scientology. It's got levels. It's got, like, all this stuff. It is very similar to Scientology. They just don't have nearly the real estate footprint around the world.
Right, right.
Did you know that the Scientologists got it set up on, like, 125th and 3rd?
Do they really know?
Yes. Like, if you go on 125th and go toward the FDR and look on the right, you will stumble upon the Scientologists.
Are you serious?
That's how we should have known they was coming to Harlem.
Man,
right,
I'm
there.
Serious.
The Scientologists got here early. They got here early. They getting big returns.
I mean, who was there first? Was it them or Clinton? Because that's
good
one
question.
Of the two. You know what I'm saying?
I need to look that up.
Yeah.
But at least Clinton got there. That building was already there. You know
right.
what I'm saying? The Scientologists, and I don't know who's going in there. Like,
right.
I don't know if they have been able to spread this to the locals, because it's not like I see the Scientologists on the street.
Right.
And if 125th Street has anything, it is people trying to pitch you on religion.
Oh, and on the street.
Yeah, any way whatsoever.
Right, right, right. Yeah, I didn't even know they had a presence. So, you know, I used to live in Harlem. I didn't know that they had that presence over there.
Yeah, I was just looking up and I was like, yo, was that Scientology?
Man.
They over there.
Everybody wants to come into Harlem now, man. I guess we all welcome. You know what I'm saying?
I guess so.
Yeah.
But we started talking about the rap list. You and I have both written. Well, you still do more writing than I do, but we've both been writer guys. People don't understand, man. The list is cash money in this business, and people fall for the list. Every single time.
It's just like, I mean, that list in particular was such a particular troll because of the Budden thing.
Yes.
I was like, they were trying to get people to say negative things about Joe Budden to make that list.
And then make Joe Budden. And,
right. Get it started. But yeah, I mean, I worked at BuzzFeed. Like, that is a place that was known for the listicle. You know, Bleacher Report. That was how they got its foundation. You know what I mean? Doing lists. And I mean, it's really, it is irresistible. Like, and people, It's one way that you know that you can get attention and penetration with a particular audience. You know what I mean?
I resisted this last list, right? I resisted it because it was just so obvious to me what was going on.
Oh, yeah.
And I'd have never heard of the person who put it out.
Oh,
and that's
like Brew Crew or something?
Right, right. And that's one of my new things now is that, like, if I don't know who you are,
right,
then I just can't invest so much
right.
in what this is. Then Ebro put out his list, and he had J. Cole over Rakim.
Oh, man, come on.
And I could not resist at that point. I just said one thing. I had to delete the tweet. Like, I was right, and he didn't have Scarface on it.
I mean,
and I was just like, I know who you are.
No female MCs.
It.
No female MCs. Just like, it was off. But, I mean, the only reason I tweeted it out is because I wanted to laugh at it.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, come on, man. Like I said, I did the Spice Adams in the car laugh where he's just like falling out. You know what I mean? Because I was just like, come on, man. This is such an evident troll. And I mean, I guess like plausibly like the first two, like they were like, okay, you kind of like, okay, Jay-Z, Nas. Like I may not agree with that, but like, okay, you know, people can make that argument. Then it like just goes off the rails.
He went straight to Joe Budden.
I mean, it was like, yo, I heard your podcast and I was like, Joe can't rap.
Yes.
Joe can rap his ass off. But come on, man.
Right.
Come on.
And see, Joe is so polarized because people don't like Joe.
Right.
And Joe done some things that make it understandable why people don't like Joe. And then there's just people that just don't like Joe.
Yeah.
For the sake of it. But Joe can rap.
Yeah,
right?
Man.
And that's where it becomes the worst about something like this is it turns into Joe can't rap. And it's like, all right, y'all gonna make me defend Joe
I mean,
right now?
Seriously, man. It's like, stop, like, you don't gotta, you, I mean, you ain't gotta diss him by bringing up Pump It Up, man. You know what
Yo,
I mean? It's like, he did more than that.
I feel so, like, I mean, I guess he eating off of Pump It Up.
Yeah.
But that's like Blessing and Curse song, right?
Right.
Because Pump It Up is also not bad.
It's not a terrible song.
He just never had another hit single.
Right. Right. But he has a whole bunch of other joints. He had a joint on his solo album, like the last one, I think it was like 7 minutes or something.
Yeah.
Like, it was like, Joe's like introspective and like a really good rapper. He could do it all, but yeah, I mean, it's like, he's,
Yep. But Joe they trolled us. They trolled us. And everybody, all these lists, always, I was like, man, I'm not going for that. Man, I'm not going for that. What?
Yes.
The one thing pops out.
It's like you could do with any list. Like you could do like NFL quarterbacks. You could be like, all right, Tom Brady. All right. Then, you know, Joe Montana number two. Right. And then they'll throw like Terry Bradshaw at number three. And it's like, it's just enough of a troll to make people argue.
Yo.
And that's the trick, you know?
Yo, you made up a hypothetical list and you're the one who made it up. And even yourself saying Terry Bradshaw third, you were about to lose your mind right here.
Yeah, I was like, wait, that's crazy. That's crazy. I mean, he did win four Super Bowls though, you know what I'm saying?
Shreveport's old.
Woodlawn High School, which is, if you've been to Shreveport, Woodlawn, it's changed. Since Terry Bradshaw was there.
Yeah. Oh, it's like that.
Woodlawn ain't with the old. Also, I think Robert Parrish went to Woodlawn.
I think so. He is also from Shreveport.
Yeah, man.
Ooh, I bet. In case y'all wonder why he always looked like that.
Yeah, hey, look, man. He had to go through it, bro.
He's a thing.
Yeah.
He's a thing. One thing, you know the story about Robert Parrish and like going, cause he knew he went to Centenary.
Oh, man, right. Yeah, right.
He went to Centenary, but basically something had come up and if I'm not mistaken, I may have the particulars wrong, but this is close enough. The NCAA had made it clear that if you took Robert Parrish, I forget what exactly the reason was, that you were going to wind up on probation. Right, there was something surrounding him. And Centenary was like, we'll take him and his friends. All right, they were like, whatever. Like, we're Centenary, right?
You're right.
Put us on what?
I mean, see, man. I mean, his friend is probably their second best player.
Oh, it was a bunch of them, though. It was like a squad of them.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Robert, they were like, whatever. Like, we ain't never going to get a boy this good ever again.
Right. Like, and they were right. They would never work.
That was 100% correct.
Right.
That it was never going to be like that. Change gears a little bit here. I want to ask you about this. Have you seen this NCAA thing with Rich Paul?
Oh, yeah.
Well, absolutely. And actually, I'm curious I'm going to give you my thought and I want to see what you think. So, to people who haven't seen this, the NCAA, and I don't think this matters as much as people are making it out to, but basically, guys, if they declare for the draft and like dip their toe in, they're now going to allow them to have agents while they do that.
Right.
Because part of the problem was cats were doing this, I'm testing the waters thing, but in order to properly test the waters, you kind of need an agent. Like you need to fly places, you know, you need all those things. And so now they let them get agents. Okay, cool. But then they put a set of restrictions on the agent. And the first one was the agent must have a college degree.
Right.
At which point people are like, oh, y'all really just trying to keep Rich Paul out the game.
Bron certainly think that.
Yeah. But see, here's where I disagree with them. One, this isn't going to keep the cats that Rich Paul wants are not dipping no toe in.
Oh, right.
You know what I'm saying? I got to see what my stock is.
Right.
No.
Right.
They're coming out.
Right.
But the other part is I know enough about the agent game to know Rich ain't the only one out here who doesn't have a college degree.
Yeah.
Right. I'm sure there are others that are in the same position as Rich where I feel like they're not so much trying to stop Rich as much as they're trying to stop the next Rich.
Right.
Right.
Right. That makes sense. I mean, the thing is, I guess I would need to know, like, what does having a college degree actually have to do with being an agent? You know what I mean? Like, cause I mean, clearly they are trying to keep somebody out. They're trying, like, whenever you do something like that, it's like standardized testing. Like, obviously they're trying to keep somebody out.
Right.
And I would like to know, like, when they were coming up with that, like, who was in mind? Like, maybe Rich Paul was in mind, but yeah, like you say, it's clearly with somebody else, like whoever comes up next. And I don't know, man. I just, you know, the thing is that you never can think that the NCAA doesn't have some sort of ulterior motive when they do something like
right.
this. It's just like, and first of all, like what necessitated this change? Like what made it? Cause I mean, I know we said that the players need,
right.
you know, whatever, but like, was there some sort of a problem before that we were unaware of?
Well, what they were trying to do is something that makes it better for the players, right? Cause they like to do these little bitty things that look like they care.
Right.
But I don't understand it from the NCAA. Like, Pablo makes the point that he thinks that they're just inflating the value of a college degree, right? Like that's kind of the point of doing it is that, you know, it's like, you know, their business is a college degree is currency. And so therefore they need to say that, well, if you're going to work with our guys, you've got to have a college degree.
You can be a coach and not have a college degree.
Well, you got to go get it.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right.
Now, people don't know that. A whole lot of these cats, like I used to play in the league, they got to go take the correspondence
they hurry
courses.
Up all of a sudden, yeah, right.
Like, where
right.
did you graduate? I think it was Sidney Lowe, NC State's own Sidney Lowe,
yeah.
graduate of St. Paul's College.
Is it really? I was about to say, was it Southern New Hampshire or something like that?
They had to go figure it out quick, man. They get you in summer school and you go ahead and knock out that degree. Like, that's I think that this is much more just, like you said, it's just gatekeeping.
Right.
Like, it's not even about one person. It's not even really going to affect anything.
Right.
That's, but it's just gatekeeping.
Right. And that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't, like, the pool of players for whom this is, like, going to apply, like, it doesn't even make a lot of sense that you, I just kind of feel like the kids that are going to do that, that they don't need an agent, to be honest. Like, I haven't seen, generally, teams will make allowances for you. So if you're really somebody that they're going to work, they'll work around you and make, they'll do workouts for you. You can have, you know, somebody in your family to represent you or whatever. I'm not sold on the idea that you even really hire an agent for at that step in the game. I mean, I can see where it can make it better, but I also can see where it's just sort of a superfluous person added to the system.
Yeah. Like it's all so convoluted. I think it's just the ultimate moral of the story, but I just love the idea that they just kind of like, cause here's the thing with agents. I said this on here before. Not everybody can be an agent.
Right.
But anybody can be an agent.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Actually, now that we're talking about it, you know what else I noticed in that is that any of the agents that are certified by the NCAA, they have to help them with investigations. And I think that's probably as important as anything else with them, because often those agents, they'll be like, man, look, I don't undo with you, man. And you know how agents get in the game.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So, like, I just kind of feel like for the people to whom this applies, like, it's just not even going to be a thing.
Right. Because the thing is, they can't get players to tell, because players leave.
Right.
And then it's like, whatever. But they can. They have iterated interactions with the agents.
Right.
Therefore, maybe you can get the agent to start snitching.
Right.
And I'm just kind of like, nah, I don't think y'all understand how this is actually going
to
go.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, agents are not, they can't afford to snitch and cooperate. I mean, like, come on, dog.
So, game to game.
Yeah, right, right.
Game to game. It'd be like when they were talking about all that tampering in the NBA, and the NBA was like, cool, well, we'll just be checking servers and everything else. And everybody was like, you know, this tampering thing, not as bad as I thought it was 15 minutes ago.
Right. It's like, look, man, like, nobody wants to. The only way we know that people are tampering is when somebody wins.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? It's like, there were other people in the running too. You know what I'm saying? But I was like, nah, I don't.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
We only know about tampering from the people that win. Well,
yeah, right. I was like, oh man, they were tampering, but you tried to get him too. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
Right, right.
Now, but all NCAA stuff at this point. Like, I'm curious, like, when you were in school doing this, like, did you realize that this was a scam?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, for me, like, I thought it was great because I got an opportunity to get an education, right? But, like, I'm not LaDainian Tomlinson. I'm not a cat like, you know, LeBron, for whom, you know,
right.
My parents probably could not have afforded for me to have gone to college like that. Or it would have been
not that one.
Not that one. Right. Yeah. It would have been a little bit more difficult. I would have had to go to U of H or something like that.
Right.
But for, you know, the kids that, like, actually have real value, you know what I mean? Or, like, 4 or 5 star, whatever. Because, I mean, really, it's just, like, a few kids that are floating the system along. You know what I'm saying? There's only a few kids that really we're talking about bring in, like, this tremendous value. You know, the Manziels, the Vince Youngs,
right.
All those kind of guys. And so I was like, oh, for those dudes, they definitely should be getting paid. You know what I'm saying? Hey, if you wanted to pay me, that's great. But, like, those dudes are the ones that are driving a lot of the value and a lot of the fandom and all that sort of stuff. And I was like, yo, like, they don't have any – it's not even just that, like, they're not getting paid, but they're not even getting to have, like, a college experience.
Right.
And you see that with the LSU locker room thing. It's just, like, they don't even want them boys on the other side of campus. They just want they want them to do just enough to go to school and then be over here about their football. And, like, you can just – you know, as soon once you get in the system, you already know, oh, I know what it is. They want me over here for football. My coach got mad at me for having a science lab one time that started at, like, 6 o'clock, which meant I had to leave practice a little early.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? He's like, what are you doing? You know what I mean? I'm just like, oh, okay, I guess this really is not anything about school. You know, I was like, I need these credits to graduate. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, and it's like the end of practice. I mean, it's like a very end. I would have just had to leave a few minutes early. He's like, what are you doing? You
right.
know? So, yeah, man.
And I wonder what it's like for a cat like you. Like, you coming in there with your fancy private school education,
yeah,
and it's obvious that you're out here trying to read these books.
Oh, man.
And they got no use for that.
Man, dude. I mean, like, I'll never forget Bud Casey, man. Bud Casey was my running backs coach at TCU. He coached Bo Jackson at Auburn.
And how many times did you hear about that?
Oh, man, a lot. But you know what? Bo Jackson hated him and wrote about it in his autobiography. But Casey was from Dothan, Alabama, man. He was one of them, you know, this old Southern cat. Well, I mean, dude was in college for like 9 years. Mm-hmm. He's a legend. And anyway, I'll never forget. I had difficulty. I just didn't want to study the playbook. Like, I just thought football was boring, man. By the time I got to college, I was like, this is terrible. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I was having difficulty picking up a play. And, coach knew my SAT score. And he was like, man, you could be governor. What do you, you know, why are you mm-hmm. so late? And I was, you know, it was just like, it was meant as like, dog, like,
what are you
school
doing?
What's your book learning ain't helping you here, bro. You know what I'm saying? And I was like, that makes a fair point. But like, yeah, they don't respect any of that stuff. Like, they don't, it doesn't matter to those guys. They want you to be smart at football, and you do have to be smart to play and to excel at football, but like, they don't care about what you do in class or anything like that. And I knew that really, really early. And they could, I mean, the major I had, like, nobody else on the team majored in journalism. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, I would. Don't go in there talking about you want to major in some engineering and some economics. Or oh my like god, that.
Yeah, man. I mean, kinesiology, that comes up a lot. You know what I'm saying? That's the one. They're just like, hey, man, you want to do science? Do kinesiology. You know?
Well, when I was at Carolina, and we started like as graduate students, we were TAs, and somebody raised the question like, so what do we do if we get an athlete, right? Like they immediately had peep game on mm-hmm. what could happen, you know, and all that, and it was explained. You ain't getting no athletes. don't you worry about
right.
that.
Yeah.
You not getting no athletes.
Oh yeah. A coach sees you on your academic plan, engineering or something, like, nah, bro. We got something else for you. History. You know what I'm saying? There's something else. Like, man, history probably too much. Yeah, even for that.
I taught at another school and they were like, yeah, you might get a football player. Right, they're students. Right. You're not getting these other boys.
Oh
they
yeah,
they got more important things to do.
Oh, basketball, man. I mean, I don't even know how they go to class. I mean, in the spring,
they're saying it wraps over two semesters.
Yeah, man. I mean, that like they don't have any time. Like if you're actually on a good team, I mean, you make it to the tournament. I don't know how they ever manage it. So, it's always been I've always known that it was, you know, a scam. But you know, I mean, I think if like you're, you know, a kid from a good, you know, wealthy background and you do, you know, play polo or something like that or what, that's not a sport, but you know what I mean? Like golf, then yeah, it probably is a good deal for you. But like the cats that play football and they don't really allow you to, you know, access everything that's on the college campus, which is joining a fraternity or, you know, joining, you know, the Black Student Union Club right. or whatever. Like you don't get to have that experience.
Or just sitting around doing nothing.
Oh man. Dude, I'll never forget, I was walking across campus one day back to my dorm, and I saw these kids throwing the frisbee around on a yard, and I was like, man, that looked fun. I was like, that looked fun, man. I'd like to do that someday. I never did, but it looked like a lot of fun. That looked like what college was supposed to be.
Yeah,
about.
Just posting up. Like a significant part of college is just posting up.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. Dudes got into video games.
Oh, yeah. But they keep y'all amongst each other.
Oh, yeah. It was just us. You know what I'm saying? And I was like, oh, I thought I played video games. Mm-hmm. But nah, you dudes, you guys are professionals.
Well, I also imagine, too, for you, you went straight Jesuit, and then you get to TCU. And you met some people. You've been around, you know, town and stuff like that. But I still imagine that when you got there, it was kind of like, oh, these cats are from a different part of town.
Oh, my God, man. I mean, you know, it was a culture shock. It definitely was. Like, I mean, how... Should I say this? Should I talk about my boy, man?
You ain't gonna put his name on it.
I ain't gonna put his name on it. This dude on our team, and I'll never forget, we went one night to Best Buy then you had to go buy cassette singles.
Yes.
So I just went and bought my cassette single. He came with me for whatever reason, just rolled with me. I was one of the few people on the team that had my car with me. And he come back, we parked, and I just left my car unlocked for some reason. I don't know. And he was just like, don't do that, bro. Don't do that. And I was like, wow, what's going on? He's like, don't do it. So I just went back, locked it. That semester, he got kicked off the team for stealing out of people's cars. Yeah. Yeah, man. Yeah. I was like, oh, okay. He was really trying to help me, man. I appreciate you, dog.
You know? I thought you was going to say he went into Best Buy boosted.
Oh, no. I mean, I've been with cats like that before. I mean, man, that was on the team that's still in prison now.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So it was kind of a little bit of a culture shock. But I mean, I grew up in Most City, you know, but some dudes are really like.
Well, I was about to say though, you grew up in Most City, but I imagine somewhat in a life where a lot of people were keeping you away from certain things and from certain people.
Yes.
And then you get to play college football and those guys, people are glad they're there to keep them away from certain people.
Yeah.
However, they are also in some ways the certain people that somebody was trying to keep. Away from. Not all of them, just to be clear, but it's always a couple.
Oh yeah, because football can definitely be the thing that like, a sports can be the thing that keeps you away from like, you know, the folks they trying to keep you away from. Right. But then those dudes, some of those dudes are really good athletes. And, and I played with a few of them, and it's just like, oh, like this cat's a real gangster. You know what I'm saying? Or like, just don't mess with that dude because, you know what I'm saying? Like, he could be selling whatever, you know what I mean? And like, you know, that was just different.
Yeah, football team got 85 people. It's always going to be like just a couple. And I think TCU never got to that point. Like Baylor, the thing I explain to people about Baylor is, if you are that dedicated to Baylor being good at football,
oh, man,
you can't turn dudes down, right? Yeah. Like, if you're good, there are only so many people good at football that want to come to Baylor. Right. You can't be turning them down for reasons that don't have to do with football. Oh, and that's how you wind up. Or you look around, you're like, dog, what is going on?
Oh, yeah, man. It's just like, yo, this dude kind of rough, man. How you getting here? Yeah, but you know what? What's funny is that when I was at TCU, we had a run of dudes get arrested so much that we were known as Texas Criminal University. We played SMU in 97 at the Cotton Bowl, and like SMU had like all these signs about us, Texas Criminal University. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I'll never forget, we won a game that year, and our coach was like, man, don't mess up. Don't mess up tonight. Just enjoy the win. Don't mess up. And then somebody went out and got arrested for a DUI that night, and it was in the paper the next morning. And I was just like, dog. And so, you know, man, you know, it's tough. I mean, the thing is that criminals, a boy 18 to 24 years old, man, I mean, the line between your criminality and just being a dumb kid is really thin anyway.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So you might just end up doing something illegal, you know, but that's just, you, that could also just be boys being boys, I guess.
Yeah. But then it's like Nebraska, back when Nebraska was good.
Oh my God.
Yo, man, they were letting anybody get in there.
Thunder Collins? Wait, no, who's a cat that was?
Lawrence Phillips.
Not just Lawrence Phillips, but there's a cat that killed somebody. There was a running back in Nebraska.
Right. I think it is Thunder Collins.
Was it Thunder Collins?
I think it is Thunder Collins.
Yeah.
Dude. Johnny Rogers won the Heisman in 1971. Johnny Rogers caught a felony charge for like sticking up a gas station.
Oh my God.
Yo, yeah, but man, it's like a different time. It's the middle of nowhere. They were just like, yo, how, like, who else wants to come to Nebraska? like Nebraska figured out, you know who we're really attractive to? Kids who need to get out of LA. Right? Kids that need to go way far away from wherever they're from.
And that's how Oregon got good too. They were getting kids. Remember D'Anthony Thomas went there and he was just like, man, I had to get out of LA. And I was like, yeah, man, you know? I feel that.
Like, I got a homeboy that, you know, Langston in Oklahoma, right? Yeah. Black House, Oklahoma. Oh, yeah. I had a homeboy that went there. And he told me that how he ultimately wound up there, something happened to L.A., and he said he called his pops in Oklahoma. He was like, look, I know me and you got our problems, but if you really love me, then I'm going to be there in a couple of days, and you going to let me in. Right? That's how he wound up going to Langston. He's just like, I have to get as far away from where I am as possible.
Yeah, what you call it? Can't go back.
Can't go back, man. It wasn't an option.
Yeah, right.
It wasn't an option. Now, we got a couple of minutes left. Before we let you go, I want you to talk to the folks a little bit about the podcast that's coming up with Slate. Slow Burn.
Yeah, man. Yeah. We're really early in the process. We had our first in-studio interview yesterday with a member of Junior Mafia it wasn't Lil C's.
Okay. It's like sixes?
No. Now, you know, the thing is, everybody is interview C's. Uh-huh. And so we trying to get stories of people that I heard before. And, like, it's going to be really unique. I mean, the thing is about it is, like, a lot of people have said, oh, you know, this is about the deaths of Biggie and Tupac. But what we're trying to emphasize to people is that we're actually going to talk about their lives and how they intersected with each other and how they were friends. And, like, not a lot of people have talked about, like, that time in their lives when they were friends and, like, you know, they were just – seem to be heading in different paths, and like why the beef between them was so personal and why it got heated so quickly, because you know, they're just, you know, I just want people to know that there's more to them than how they died. And right. So that's what we're spending a lot of time on this season on. And so, you know, we're getting some people in the studio. We got a couple of interviews. That's why I'm in town today. You know what I'm saying? I didn't expect you to be here. You know what I'm saying? I thought you were going to be in Miami. You know what I mean?
No, man. Dude, this sounds like a dope, like, opportunity to, because we're at a point now where I think it's easy to forget that not everybody grew up with this. Like this is a legendary story now that people know, and we're far enough removed from it that we can view it with a different context because we're all in different points in our lives.
Right. Well, you know, there were a lot of assumptions. There are a lot of assumptions that were made about Tupac and Biggie about what we knew about them, right? And their lives and the music that they made. And, you know, I thought that too. I was like, oh, I thought I knew everything there was to know about it. When you read about them, and just like, you know, the idea that, like, you think that it was like both these camps are going against each other, east versus west. And it was like, no, not really. You know what I'm saying? There was a lot more to, like, you know, Biggie and Bad Boy and them, they were not really like trying to fight these dudes. You know what I mean? Like, that, they did a lot to, you know, not, some people may disagree with that, but From what we can tell, you know, they did a lot to like try to turn down the heat on that. They didn't want anything like that. And, you know, Tupac, man, you know, for everything that people said about him, I mean, he was a really sensitive dude. You know what I mean? He was very loyal to the people that were around him. And like, you could see how things could escalate. You know, when he got shot that time here in New York, the first time. And so, yeah, it's a very personal relationship. And that's why the beef got the way that it did, because I mean, these guys were friends. And like, you know, when anytime people get, you know, that are close and they, you know, have a fight or something like that, it can be really ugly.
Hey, man, I'm looking forward to that. That's my man, Joel Anderson. Yeah. Check out the Slow Burn podcast at Slate. Now, it's October 30th. This is going to drop.
October is drop. Yep.
So
man,
we got a little bit of time. They're the fastest 10-year-old in the United States.
Yeah, I don't care what Jason Johnson say, man. I would've got you, dog. I would have got you. Yeah.
But hey, man, ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. My man, Gabe Bassane, handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. We are not doing a show on Tuesday. Got something coming for you in a couple of days after that. We'll let you know more about that. Also, remember, The Right Time Book Club with Mike Freeman, Tuesday, August 27th. We will wrap up the book, so be sure to check that out. Tweet about it with the hashtag The Right Time Book Club. Thanks to our sponsor, Hims, and also check out the Woj Pod this week. He chats with Blazers guard CJ McCollum. Remember, subscribe to The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars, I'm inclined to think you're a hater, and we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.